Okay, so one last one. If you want to download the tutorial materials, you can go to this tinyurl.com/schemageuoscipy, or you can also follow the link on the uoscipy program webpage. And if you don't have internet access, there are two USB sticks. Thank you. I have one of them. So to be sure that everybody has the time to download the materials, to open the folder, start the index notebook, which is here, we will start with a gentle introduction to scikit-image. So without any notebooks, it will be just some slides so that everybody has the time to get the setup running. And then we have four different notebooks that we will see together, and with a mixture of code and exercises. And there are also two bonus notebooks if you're going really fast and you already know everything about image processing. One thing is that I just pushed these two notebooks by just, I mean, 1 minute ago. So if you downloaded the materials before and you want to do the bonus notebooks, you need to download them again. A few words about myself. So I'm Emmanuel. I'm a researcher in material science in Paris. And I study glass, for example. I do a lot of 3D imaging, tomography. I've been a scikit-image core contributor for a couple of years now, 5 years, I think. And so here you can find my contacts. And as a small anecdote, I also do scientific Python as a family, because you may have seen that we brought our scikit baby, who was crawling around the day before, and my partner, Gail, is working with scikit-learn. So I do scikit-image, he does scikit-learn, and we have the scikit baby. So, guten Morgen, everybody. I see that some people are still getting installed. So let's start with a small introduction to scikit-image. With that, it's here. So you can access the slides by just clicking on this link, uoscipy.pdf. And so I will be presenting today the scikit-image toolkit, which is for image processing. So a small survey. Who does image processing here in the audience? A couple of people, yeah? And for which applications do you use image processing? Sorry? ORC? Yeah, like text recognition or feature extraction for machine learning, okay. And for which kind of end application? Okay, very interesting. Industrial quality check. Spectral imaging? For which kind of domain?
All kinds,
okay, cool. Shock physics, okay, so you have an experiment in physics and your data are images and you need to get some science out of that, cool. Someone else? Satellite imaging, great. So as you see, there are a lot of different applications of image processing. So you've named a few very interesting ones, and I've put some other here, including medical imaging. So you mentioned satellite imaging. Can you recognize automatically, for example, that there is a drought somewhere in agriculture, cell biology, automatic driving, where you need to be really fast to recognize that a car is coming ahead of you, or text recognition for this very nice Google Translate application, for example. So there are a lot of different fields where you want to do image processing. And by image processing, I mean very loose definition of taking images as data and doing some action based on this image. It can be producing a new image, extracting scientific data or taking a decision like braking your car very fast. Hi to everybody who is just coming. So if you want to download the materials, the URL is here. And I'm just taking 5 minutes to introduce scikit-image with slides so that everybody has the time to download the notebook. So there are also 2 USB keys which are passing around. So what is scikit-image? Scikit-image is the image processing library that is integrated with a scientific Python ecosystem. So with Python, but with NumPy data array. And there are other image processing libraries using Python, like you may have heard of OpenCV, for example, which is a really good and powerful library. Scikit-image is maybe the more NumPy-ish library. That is, you will see during the tutorial that it works really well with NumPy arrays. It has a very simple API, so it's really good to get started with image processing. And also, it works for 2D and 3D images. So in the tutorial, we will see only 2D images because it's easier to visualize. But if you're doing tomography or confocal microscopy, MRI, or if some colleagues in the lab are using this kind of imaging modality, you can also use scikit-image for this. So you all know the NumPy data container array, which is a very powerful object to manipulate digital data with possibilities such as indexing, slicing, fancy indexing. And since we all love the NumPy array, we would like to have a image processing package where we can also use NumPy arrays. And what is really nice is that there is a direct correspondence between arrays and images, because, for example, if you take this small code, where I defined an array of shape 5x5, and it has some black and white pixel, so the array can directly be visualized as an image. So a 2D image is just a grayscale. Sorry, a 2D array is just a grayscale array. And if I want to get a 3D, an RGB, a color image, then this image has, in fact, a third dimension corresponding to the RGB channels. So this is how we will manipulate RGB images. And so a 3D image, like a 3D cube that you can find in tomography, for example, it's just a 3D NumPy array. The API of scikit-image is quite simple. It relies mostly on functions. So you have some modules where you can find functions like this Gaussian filter function, and function operate on NumPy arrays, and most of them have as an output the also NumPy arrays. So this is drawn here. You have the module scikit-image, which you import as skimage, some module filters, restoration. So it's not a completely flat namespace. You always have to find functions inside some modules. So you will see a lot of from skimage, import filters, and so on. And I will use mostly the submodule names. And you have functions inside the submodules which operate on NumPy arrays and which have an output which is also a NumPy array, or it can be also a value like a threshold or something like that. So scikit-image interacts well with the rest of the scientific Python ecosystem. You might have seen some other tutorials here at EuroSciPy yesterday. Well, it was in the intro track. There was a very nice tutorial on NumPy. Sorry about that. And so you can open a file from the disk as a NumPy array, then apply some filters, get some new NumPy arrays. And since you manipulate NumPy arrays, you can also use other Python modules like scikit-learn for machine learning on the same data objects, which can be really convenient. And you can also do some visualization using the usual scientific Python modules like matplotlib, MayaVi, and so on. So here I'm just flashing a couple of slides of what you can do with scikit-image. You can do image filtering, that is transforming an image into another image using some neighborhood information about the pixels. For example, blurring filters or edge filters. You can do segmentation, that is labeling pixels corresponding to different objects. Measures an image of the label where you want to know the size, the perimeter and so on of objects. So this tutorial will not be a catalog of all the different submodules and what you can do in each submodule. It would be very boring. Instead, I will try to show you some classical image processing operations that you can do with scikit-image, and it will most of the time use several submodules at the same time, because in image processing, one thing that is very important is to have some ideas about a processing strategy or workflows, because you will need to combine different operations together, and that's what I will try to show you in this tutorial. So let me just show you the scikit-image website, because it might be useful if you're looking for documentation. So it's on scikit-image.org. Oops, sorry. And so it has a documentation webpage, but what's very useful is a gallery of examples. And I really encourage you to go often to the gallery if you're doing image processing, because this gallery consists in little pictures where with a title. So if, for example, you want to, I don't know, to label an image, to label objects, you can just do label. And okay, there is this label image regions. I want to know how to do that. And here I have some code, a few explanations, and the resulting image. So it's a quite convenient way to learn image processing by the example. So who in the audience is already using scikit-image? Like 10 people maybe? And are you using the gallery or from time to time? Yeah, not so much. So it might be a good idea to use the gallery more, because you can learn a lot of things. Okay, so so much for the introduction. So who could not download or copy the tutorial materials? Okay. Is it better like this? No. And like this? Yeah. Okay. Thanks. About tutorial materials, who doesn't have the folder copied on his or her disk? Everybody has it? Okay. That's really nice. So we will start with the first notebook, which is images as digital arrays, where we will see that in scikit-image, images are just standard NumPy arrays, as I said in the slides, and that you can manipulate image arrays as you would do with any other arrays. So let's get started. So here I just import matplotlib, NumPy, and let's create our first image using the data submodule of scikit-image. So I import this submodule. Yes? What's the name of what? Oh, sorry. It's so index is this table of contents here, and then it's arrays. So here we are on the arrays.ipython notebook. Okay. So we create an image array using one of the functions of the data submodule. And if we ask for its type, it is an empire data array. And since we can also check that it's a 2D array. And since it's a 2D array, we can plot it using matplotlib. Okay, so basically any 2D array can be plotted using the imshow command, imshow for image show of matplotlib. And so here in this cell, I wrote the correspondence between pixel values. So here I accessed the top left corner of the coins image using standard indexing of NumPy arrays. So I get an integer value of 47, and then the data type. So it's unsigned integers on 8 bytes. And the interval of pixel values, so I can use standard statistics on the NumPy arrays using coins.min, coins.max, and the image dimensions, it's just the shape of the array. Okay, so it's very transparent, so you don't even need an abstraction on top of the NumPy array to manipulate images, which makes interoperability really better, because if you would have a separate image object, then you would lose the generality of the NumPy arrays. So here we created a grayscale image, and now we will have an RGB image, which is a cat image. So I tried to put a lot of coffee and cat images so that it's easier for you early in the morning to follow this tutorial. So here was the first cat image. And when you ask for its shape, you see that so this first number corresponds to the number of rows, and then the number of columns, as in a standard NumPy array. And then the last shape dimension is the number of channels R, G, and B. So one thing that is very important is that if you have any question, even if you think that this question is really dumb, it probably is not dumb at all, so please ask it, because some people are probably listening to this tutorial and streaming or later on YouTube, but the difference with you is that they cannot ask questions. So please take advantage of being here in this room, and I'm sure that your questions will be really useful for other people. So please, please, please ask questions. So since we have an NumPy array, we can start modifying the image. For example, let's say that I want to make a red square somewhere in the image. So a red square means that I want to modify the first channel of the image, and that's what I do here. So I modify all the channels so that the first one is 255, so fully red, and then the other channels are to zero, so no green and no blue. And okay, so it works. I can have a red square on my image. So you see, I didn't use any scikit-image function here, it's just standard NumPy machinery. So a quick reminder of shapes: 2D grayscale, it's row column coordinates, 2D multi-channel, row column channel, and you have the same for 3D images. So let's start with a very simple exercise. Well, let's start with this exercise. It might or might not be easy, but it will make you use NumPy. So what I want you is to take the cat picture and to modify it with a frame, a black frame around it, a 20 pixel black frame. You can keep the same shape, just put the border, the 20 pixel wide border, and make it black. So let's take 3 minutes for this. And by the way, I will show the solution to most exercises, but if you want to be sure at home that you have the solution, there is a solution notebook for most notebooks, maybe not for the arrays because there is just one exercise, but after, for example, Neighbours has it neighbours-solution notebook. So there are notebooks of solutions. And if you're having trouble with anything, please raise your hand.
This thing that I did the gray color map with this, and let's just say, okay, and it just stayed the same.
Yeah, okay, don't. It's because it's an RGB, it's a good point. I will. I will answer one question for everybody because here you might see that I had used the color map for the coins image, color map equal gray. It was because there is no color information for a grayscale image, so Matplotlib has to know how to visualize it. Should it use a black to white color map or dark blue to yellow color map, like false colors. But for the RGB image, since there is a color channels, you don't need to specify a color map. It will just use the RGB triplets for every pixel. So if you add a color map, it won't do anything or it will throw an error, I don't know. Yeah, because the color information is already in the image. Does that make sense? But thanks for the question. So who has already done the exercise? Fraction of people. So I will start correcting it. So we have our cat array, and we want to draw this black frame. So we cannot do one line of code to do this, so we will first color in black the first 20 lines, the last 20 lines, and then we will do the same for the columns. So the first 20 lines, it can be done like this. Then the last 20 lines. The first 20 columns. And the last 20 columns. And let's check this. Okay. So you see that here, although the value for the pixels 0, it should be a triplet 0, 0, 0 for each channel, I'm using here what's called NumPy broadcasting, which, so I could do it like this. But if I just write 0, then NumPy automatically completes for all the channels. So it's another illustration of the power of NumPy. You don't need to write a lot of code. It can be quite implicit, and then it does what you want. Okay. Did it make sense, or is it puzzling someone here? No? Okay. One thing that is also very nice with NumPy is that you can use Boolean masks. So who doesn't know about Boolean masks? You're perfectly right not to know. There's no problem if you don't know it. But a mask is a NumPy array on which you apply a Boolean condition. For example, here, when I write coins smaller than 90, so it's a Boolean condition which will be applied to every pixel, and it will return an array of the same shape as coins, but where each pixel will be true or false, depending whether the condition is true or false. So, for example, yeah, let me just create. Okay, so here this mask background I just represented here. So it's a Boolean array, and I can use this Boolean array to perform operations on another image of the same shape, like my original image. For example, if I want to put to zero all the pixels of the coin image where the value was smaller than 90, I can do this using this very compact syntax. Coins BG of mask BG equals zero. So what it means is that it will put to zero all the pixels of coins BG for which the mask was true. Okay. Are you familiar with this kind of... Okay, so this can be really useful for images because you can just take a subset of the pixels thanks to the mask and then do some operations, like modifying the pixels. So I will not do this exercise here because it's just very standard NumPy machinery, but if you're interested, you can do it at home or if you're bored during the tutorial, which is just writing a function to convert a color image to grayscale by applying weights to the three different color channels. And this weight that you see here, they correspond to the sensitivity of your eye because we're much more sensitive to the green channel. So this is an exercise, but in fact, there is a function of scikit-image in the color submodule, which does exactly this for you, converting a color image to gray. It's called RGB to gray. Okay, a few words about data types of pixel values. You might have seen that the coins image had integer values for its pixels. And you have two different conventions for data types and values of pixel intensities. The first one corresponds to the usual JPEG PNG images that you have, where one pixel is encoded between 0 and 255, that is 2 to the power 8 minus 1. So it's an image encoded on 8 bits. And so these are integers, which is nice because you have a limited number of values, so you save a lot of space on disk, for example, but the precision is quite limited. And you might also want to do operations on floats, for example, when you want to do convolutions or apply some weights on pixels, then it's more natural to do this with floating point numbers. However, for floating point numbers, what should be the interval of pixel values? The scikit-image convention corresponds to what is found in the mathematical literature, which is that pixels should be between 0 and 1, so not between 0 and 255 float. So it means that you can have some conversions from integers to floats that change the range of pixel values. So this might be a bit confusing when you start using scikit-image. So that's why I really wanted to insist on that. And so I have some example about data types here. The first cell here is to show you that integer data type can be a bit dangerous if you don't pay attention. For example, here I have this camera image. So once again, that I found in the data submodule of scikit-image. And let's say it's an empire way, so I can do whatever I want. And in particular, I can multiply it by two. Why not? However, it's an integer only on 8-bit. So it's very easy to have overflow. And when I display the image here, you can see that some pixels that should be quite dark are now quite bright, and the sky that was bright is now dark. It's because we have looped on 8 bits. It's modulo 255, and so we don't have the right pixel values. So careful with overflow. If you want to do operations, usually it's better to switch to float, and for this, you can use the image as float function of scikit-image. So when I convert my camera image to float, you see that the max that was 255 in uint 8 is now 1, the floating point numbers. And if I apply a Gaussian filter, which uses some floating point weights to the camera image, which was integer type, you see that first the output, so camera Gaussian, has a floating point number data type, and also that its max is very different from the max of the original image, because now it has values between 0 and 1. So please be careful about intensity values, and if you're not sure, I would advise to switch to floating point numbers as soon as possible. Okay, so with images, of course, you don't want to use only the images of the scikit-image data module, yes?
Say I have a floating point image from 0 to 1 and I multiply it by 2.
Yes.
So
okay, so the question was, let's say I have a floating point number image from 0 to 1, and you multiply it by 2. So this will not be a problem because you don't have an overflow. However, some scikit-image algorithms have parameters that are tuned for 0 to 1 intervals, like default parameters of some filters. They assume that the max is 1 and not 2. So you might have behaviors that are suboptimal. So you will have less problems with floating point numbers, but it's still better to try to stick to the 0-1 range. And I think that you have a function to rescale. Let me check this in the color submodule, color dot. Color dot. Is it like rescale? Or maybe util? Transform? Oh, thank you. In which submodule? Well, when I don't know, what I do is I go to the scikit-image documentation and then to the API reference, and then we scale intensity. Okay, it's in the exposure submodule. Okay. But you see, there are a lot of functions in scikit-image, so it's completely okay not to know all functions. But you might guess that if you have an operation that you may want to apply several times, it's already coded in scikit-image. So go to the API web page, just type some keywords, see which functions are available, and if you can use a function that's already coded, you'll have less bugs in your code. It will be easier to maintain, so it's always better to use a function that is already coded instead of writing your own functions. Also, using the gallery of examples might be useful. Not as a first step, but for example, here when I used this Gaussian filter on the camera, you see that I got floating point numbers, but I can camera Gaussian uint equal images as you write. You see, I convert back to.
Yeah, I know that you can convert to backup, or if you want to minimize memory usage, for example.
If you want to minimize the memory usage?
Yeah.
No. Well, it wouldn't make sense, I think, because when you're using a Gaussian filter, the Gaussian kernel is a floating point array. It has weights which are. Okay, so if it were like a uniform window, there is a uniform filter, and if you input an integer data type, it will output an integer data type. So when it makes sense to stick with integers, we always stick with integers.
Okay.
Yeah, but thanks for the question. Yeah, memory usage, it's quite well done in scikit-image, I would say. There is always room for improvement, and if you have some ideas about how to save memories, you're very welcome to open issues and so on GitHub. But for example, since I'm a tomography user, I have really huge images, like 1 gigabyte image for one image, so I'm very concerned about saving memory as much as possible. So what can we do if we want to use other images than the ones from scikit-image.data? We can use the IO for input-output submodules for opening and saving from and to image files that are on disk. So here I import IO, and I have this file name for the camera image, which is in the data dir of scikit-image. And so this time I use this io.imread for image read function. And if I want to save it, so here I'm just creating a temporary folder, so don't worry about that. And I can save it to disk. And I see, using the OS module, that I do have a PNG file which has the image of the camera. So imsave guesses the format of the image according to the extension. So you can use JPEG, TIFF, PNG, and so on. And it's possible also to save a floating point number image to a file, but since it will, for PNG, it will save the image as values between 0 and 255, so on 1 byte, then it raises a warning saying that there is a possible precision loss, because we lost some information from floating point numbers to the image PNG format. So if you want to keep floating point numbers, you can also use NumPy data formats like .npy, or you can also save raw data as floating point numbers. So you have several possibilities, but usually you'll be happy with saving as a JPEG, PNG, and so on. So this was the end of this first notebook. So just getting familiar with images as NumPy arrays. Is there any question before we do any real scikit-image stuff? Yes. It has maybe some different keywords arguments, like so I don't know well the matplotlib imuid, so I'm not sure about the difference. But for example, you can the question for the audio recording was what is the advantage of the scikit-image imuid, so this function to open images as numpy arrays, compared to the one that you have in matplotlib as well. And so you have a keyword argument to open a color image as a gray array, gray level image also. You have some keyword arguments like this, but the difference is very small because both functions are using a third-party library as a backend, like PIL, for example. So the core stuff is very comparable. There might even be calls to the matplotlib function. I'm pretty sure it does. Yeah. So thanks for the question, Phil. And now we will switch to our second notebook, which is about image visualization. So you can either click on visualization, or if you go to the folder, it's visualization.ipnb. Visualization and image processing. So when we're doing image processing, we're very lucky people, because compared to other kind of data like speech processing or marketing data in a 1 million dimension data space, we can visualize almost everything that we can do. And we should really take advantage of this by visualizing, of course, the final results that we want to get, but also intermediate steps to be sure that when we have different filters, the output of one function is really what we want to get, and so on. So for this, we have several visualization possibilities. So of course, we can visualize images with this imshow function of matplotlib, but you also have functions to draw contours of values in an image, like this contour in red here, or you can also plot points superimposed on an image, like what was done here in yellow on this image, plotting the points of interest with corners. And so in this notebooks, you have a few examples about how to use imshow, how to use contours, and how to draw coordinates. And there is an exercise at the end, which is to draw the contours of the darkest regions on an image. And so I will not execute all the cells, because it's quite boring, I think, to just see the presenter doing Shift-Enter. And there is no image processing concept here in this notebook. It's only visualization. So I let you execute the cells and go to the exercise. And I will say a few words about the exercise at the end. So let's take a few minutes for this. So just execute the cells. I will do it, but not comment it. You can just read it. Oh yes, no. Something that's maybe important is that here I have used the matplotlib notebook extension. Before I used matplotlib inline, you might have seen. So the difference is when you do matplotlib inline, when you do imshow, you just get a static PNG image, which is perfectly okay. But if you want more interaction with your figure, then you can use matplotlib notebook, because then you get matplotlib figure inside the browser. So sorry? So we can compare the notebook that I had before, like this array. So here you see I had done imshow camera. So here what I have is just a PNG file that is displayed in an HTML page in the browser. And so, for example, I can save the image, I can copy it, and so on. And it's because I had done matplotlib inline here. And here, it's a bit different. So I'm sorry, the figure is really big because my fonts are huge. But for example, I can just, if I put my mouse on the image, I can see the value of the pixel. I can also select a region. I can move and so on. So it's more interactive. I have to say that I use a notebook for presenting, but not for my own work. And what I do when I'm working is that I do IPython just in the terminal. And then, sorry. And here, when I have this picture in Matplotlib, I do have an interactive figure where I have the value of the pixel, the coordinates, where I can zoom, and so on. It's just in the notebook that it's a bit clumsier when you have to choose the extension. And but since we're using the notebook, in this visualization notebook, I used the notebook extension so that you can have more interactions. But usually I just use the inline mode because I don't need interactions. I will just reduce the fonts for this notebook. So something which is really useful and which people usually don't know is this contour function of Matplotlib, which allows you to superimpose contours on an image. And you can actually superimpose the contour of one array on top of another image array, as long as it has compatible shapes. That's what is done in the exercise.
Does it just look for change of intensity, like going from white to black with change over a certain threshold?
So the threshold is usually specified by the user. Like this, I ask for the 40 contour, and it means that it will look for the line at which on one side you have values smaller than 40 and on the other side greater than 40. Does it answer your question? Yeah. It uses actually an algorithm that's called matching cubes. Some people might have heard about it. So just finding the contours, but you might think of a gray value image as an elevation plot, like, you know, maps where you have altitudes. You can either represent them with contours, or you can also have 3D maps. And these are exactly the same. It's like altitude lines, ISO altitude lines. Okay, so let's do the exercise. So we have this cat image, and we want to display the contour of the darkest regions. However, it's not always very convenient to speak of darker regions in an RGB image, because in an RGB image, each channel mixes together information about light intensity and color. So therefore, we can switch to another color space, which is the LAB color space. So L is for light intensity, and AB is for color. Color.rgb.lab. I think it works. Yes, and I will just display the cat image and then contour of cat lab. So I will just use the channel, the light intensity, so the first channel of the cat. Where did it go? Oh, I forgot to make a figure. Okay, so here in black, I have some contours. So I don't like the color, so I will put it yellow. And if I ask for the value 10, then I have smaller regions. And every time I decrease, I have even smaller regions, okay? So in this exercise, we see two things. Contours, obviously, and that you can display contours of the array cat LAB superimposed on another array, so this is not a problem. And also how to switch between color spaces, like from the RGB color space to the LAB color space. So this is very useful when you want to manipulate color images and you want to decouple light intensity from color information. Okay. So time is running really fast, so I will switch to another notebook now. So I see that some people are looking at the screen, so shall I leave this on the screen for a few more seconds, or? Yes? And if you have questions, please ask them. Yes? Yes. So the question is, what is this notation, three dots? So it's actually the same as doing colon for all dimensions but the last one. It's just a shortcut, meaning that take everything for all other dimensions. And so it's all dimensions, and then the other dimensions are specified. So it's all the first dimensions that are not specified. But for more clarity, I could have written this. So it's it's my usual NumPy reflex, but see, it's the same. Thanks for the question. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a great question, and we will see exactly this in the next notebook. how to do this automatically. With two ranges of values, it's very easy with scikit-image, and we will see image thresholding in the next notebook. So it's called image thresholding. With three or more, it's also possible, but it's a bit more advanced because it uses all other algorithms which are called clustering. Like you want to cluster together image values, and there is a link at the end of the tutorial for this more advanced stuff. So the question was, okay, here we're doing things by hand visualization, but you can also do this with ImageJ or other interactive programs. Can you do this more automatically? And this is what we're going to see in the next tutorial, so which is called exposure. So it's this. No, it's pixel values. Sorry, pixel values that IPython notebook. And in this IPython notebook, we see how to transform an image using the values of its pixels. Meaning, for each pixel, we will take decisions according only to the value of the pixel. We will not consider any neighborhood or anything. And this will be the last notebook, taking into account neighborhood spatial information. But here we will do simple manipulation on pixel values and contrast, and we will see image thresholding. So what we will see is how to plot the histogram of pixel values for one image, how to threshold it automatically to get a binary image, so to get an object and its background, or how to change the contrast of an image. So, is it large enough at the back, or shall I increase it a bit? No, it's fine. Okay, cool. So, let me. Oh, I forgot this. Let me use once again this camera image. And here I will use functions from the exposure submodule. So let's start by looking together at the documentation of the exposure.histogram function. And it says that it returns the histogram of an image. So it uses a number of bins for the histogram that is a good value when you have 8-byte integers. So we won't have to bother about it here, and it returns the values of the histograms and the centers of the bin. Okay, so we can ask for the histogram of this camera image and then plot it. So here is a plot of the histogram where you can see how many pixels you have in the dark values. So this corresponds, for example, to the coat of the cameraman, and that you have a broader peak for lighter values, and corresponding for the mostly to the background. And so we have already seen how to plot contours corresponding to different values. And when you plot different contours, here you see that we can have different contours, and you see that in this region here, where the histogram is very flat and doesn't have many pixels, then the contour don't change much. So I have an exercise here to plot the histogram of three RGB channels for an image, but I will leave it for people who are really fast and go directly to image binarization because we have an exercise at the end, so we'll still have an exercise in this notebook. So when I have my array camera, I can choose a threshold to binarize it by hand, but first, it requires me to plot the histogram and then to decide, okay, here it might be good to threshold the image because there is a clear separation between black pixels and bright pixels. But it requires some work, and if I have a large number of images, like a time series, for example, I want an automatic decision to be taken. Or if I don't want any user, like I'm driving my automatic car, it needs to decide by itself whether to brake or not. I don't want to look at the histogram of pixels. So for this, we will use automatic thresholding functions that you can find in the filters submodule of scikit-image. So you have this filters.threshold_o2 function, because O2 is the most common thresholding algorithm. And in fact, what it does is it tries to cluster the histograms in two populations that are really well separated. It tries to find the best separation in statistical terms to have two populations of pixels. And so let's look at the output. So you can see that it produced segmentation automatically. So the function returns the value, the best value of the threshold, and then you can create a mask using this value. And what is nice is also that you have a lot of different thresholding algorithms in scikit-image, and you have a utility function called try all thresholds, which compares all the different threshold algorithms for one image. So you can choose the one that suits you the best. For example, here, this triangle looks nice because it doesn't have much of the background, or you can just pick one from this mosaic of examples. Okay. So I insist that here it's completely automatic thresholding. You don't need any user input value. And I have here an exercise with more advanced thresholding, where instead of having just one global threshold for the image, you can have a threshold that varies spatially. Because, for example, in this data.coins image, you can see that the background here, it's quite dark, but on the border here, it's lighter. So it's quite difficult to find a global threshold for the whole image. So what I ask you to do is to compare global thresholding, so applying O2 filter, so this function, to the coins image, and then to take a look at the threshold local function that allows you to do local thresholding and to compare the result of the two. Does that make sense? Or yeah. A quick survey. Who thinks this tutorial is going too fast? So who thinks it's going too slowly? Come on. You can't be all happy. So you think it's going a bit slowly? Okay. So who? A little bit too fast, a little bit too slow? So you must have an opinion. It can't be perfect. I'm French. I never think something is perfect. I always complain. Okay, but if you don't say your opinions, then I will assume that it's perfect. It's good for my self-esteem, so. Shall I give the solution? Who finished? Yes. So for global thresholding, it's filters threshold O2 of coins, and then im show coins. And I will just plot the contour of coins greater than value. So what you see is that let me maybe just show the mask. So when I apply a global threshold, I have several defects, like the lighter part of the background is counted as a foreground, as object, and also I have some holes in the coins, so it's far from perfect. There are several ways of visualizing this, either displaying the mask or using contours. And so let's turn to global thresholding. So I don't know the syntax of local thresholding, so threshold local, so let's just display the help. So you need to pass an image, a block size, and then it returns an array of threshold. Okay. So block size, coins, and then it needs an odd number, which is a bit silly, but this should be corrected. There are plenty of bugs in the package, and the good thing is the more you use it, the more you see the bugs. So it's very important that developers are users as well. And okay, so what do we see? We see that maybe we have less background included. It's more on the border. And we can also try to play like, maybe this was better. There are functions in scikit-image actually to remove pixels touching a border. So this image would be easier for post-processing than this one, where this part here almost touches one of the coins. So when global thresholding doesn't work well, turning to local thresholding can be a good idea. Okay, so thresholding is quite important in image processing, because for image segmentation, you often want to end up with a binary value, binary image. But with a histogram, you can do other things, like modifying the distribution of intensity values. And here, I show you the result of applying this equalized ist function, which stretches the contrast of an image. Like in this camera image that I have here, you see that here in the coat there are not so many details, because the black pixels, they are all compressed together. And so what equalized ist does is that it stretches together the part of the histogram that were too compressed, so that it has a uniform cumulative distribution function. This is this red plot. But so you will use these functions mostly for visualization, not so much for processing, because unless you want to equalize the contrast between different images that were taken with different exposure, that can be a first pre-processing step. But you didn't create any information by changing the distribution, the histogram. Actually, you lost some information due to rounding errors and so on. So be careful with this. So in this notebook, I have a last part with color images. So how to extend what we have seen for grayscale images to color images, because it's not possible to threshold one color image, because you have the three channels. And for example, here on this image of a beach, you don't have one threshold that would apply for all the color channels. So you have several options. One of them is to turn to the LAB color space that we saw in the previous notebook. And then the first, so the red one corresponds to light intensity. And then I can threshold according to light intensity, or I can use one of the color channels. Like, for example, here I used the last color channel because it will make a good difference between blue and I don't remember whether it's red or but you have two color axes, and since the color of the sky and the sea is quite different from the color of the bushes, then you see that the resulting segmentation is quite good. So I know I'm going really fast through this, so you'll have the time to look at this at home. And so here I used only the light intensity information, switching to this LAB color space. But if you want to use all the channels, because you have information in all the channels, you can also use clustering methods. And for this, I put a link here to the SciPy US tutorial that I gave 1 month ago. And where is that? Oh, I have no internet. Okay, but if you follow the link, you will have it. And you will see both how to use several channels and also how to separate an image into more than just two regions, foreground and backgrounds, but having more more labels. Okay, so we have 15 minutes left for our last tutorial, which is how to do more complex things, image filtering and segmentation. Because here with thresholding or exposure modification, what we have done is we have taken each pixel and we have looked at its value. And it's all that we have done. We have not considered its neighbors. However, usually when you have a natural image, neighboring pixels tend to belong to the same object. They tend to have similar gray values. And this is the kind of information that we can use for image processing. And in this tutorial, we will see how to filter images and how to segment an object. That is, how to attribute labels to pixels corresponding to different objects, like these coins in the coin image, and how to do some measures on these images. So the two cells are just internal machinery. This is a function to plot images together, so don't worry about this. And let's go directly to the image filtering part. So what is a linear filter? It's a convolution between, so convolution, it's a mathematical term, but don't worry about this. It's just mixing together pixels between an image and a local kernel, where you will mix together pixel values in the neighborhood of the central pixel. So for example, here, if I take this 3x3 uniform kernel, I remember that somebody mentioned, you mentioned a uniform filter, then what I will do is that I will replace a central pixel by the average of pixels in the neighborhood. So I can do this, for example, for smoothing out some noise. I can choose a red, a square kernel, but I can also choose a different geometry. Like, for example, let's say I want to take the closest neighbors, but not the diagonal pixel. So then I will have a diamond shaped kernel. And I can have different weights on the kernel, like not uniform weights, but Gaussian weights. And I can also have a nonlinear filter, which is that I will not use a linear combination of pixels around my central pixel, but I will ask for the median value, for example. So let's take some examples using once again this coins image, but a zoom on one of the coins. You can see that this little picture is a bit noisy. In these regions, you would expect to have more uniform gray values. So we can use several denoising filters. The first one is a Gaussian filter. And you see that it smooths out really well the noise, but also it smooths out the edges. And it's completely normal because it's a smoothing filter. So it does what it's supposed to do. And when you use a median filter, this time the edges are really better preserved. So when you're doing some denoising, never use a Gaussian filter, in fact. A median filter has the advantage of preserving edges, but also to be very fast. You have other denoising filters in scikit-image. If you want to use them, they can be found in the restoration submodule. Import restoration. And if you want to explore, you can do restoration. You have denoise TV for total variation. You have denoise non-local means and so on. So you can just try them and look for examples in the gallery. So how many exercises do I have here? Yeah, so we will not do the exercise about the Gaussian weights. You can do it if you feel like doing it instead of listening to me. It's fine as well. What I suggest here is to print the weights, to visualize the weights of a Gaussian kernel by applying the Gaussian filter to a very simple image, which is a delta function in mathematical terms, where you have an image that is completely zero with a central white, so one valued pixel. And then when you apply the Gaussian filter to it, you can have the weights of the Gaussian kernel. But let's move on so that we have the time to do the rest of the tutorial, and there will be one last exercise. So we have seen some simple filters like Gaussian filters, median filters, and there is another class of filters, which is called mathematical morphology. So mathematical morphology is how to modify shapes in an image. And it's very simple operations, but which are quite efficiently implemented. So it's very fast. So it has the advantage of executing really fast on large arrays. And what we will see first is how to do an erosion and a dilation. So let's create a simple image here, which is a binary image with a central bright square on a dark background. And by an erosion, you replace a pixel by the minimum value of pixels in a neighborhood around these pixels. So for this neighborhood, you need what's called a structuring element. So these structuring elements are small arrays, like a square array or diamond array. And the central value, it represents the pixel, the central pixel being considered, and the surrounding values, it's the neighbors. If you have a one, it means that this pixel will be a neighbor, and if it's zero, it does not. So let's show what an erosion does. An erosion, it replaces the value of a pixel by the minimum value of pixels covered by the central by the structuring element. So here I use a diamond cross, a structuring element, And when I do an erosion, you can see that I removed all the border pixels. Why? Because when I covered one pixel with a structuring element, it covered some zero. And therefore, it turned the central value to zero. So that's an erosion. It has a consequence of removing border pixels. And the reverse operation, it's called a dilation. So it does a reverse. It replaces a pixel by the maximum value of pixels in the neighborhood. And so it has a consequence of adding a layer of pixels on the border of a shape. So when you do an erosion with a large structuring element, you can remove some objects because, for example, here I use a square of size 5, and then when I erode it, there is nothing left. Because even for the central pixel, when I covered it with a structuring element, there were some zeros in the neighborhood, and therefore I made my object disappear. Therefore, mathematical morphology can be really useful to close some small holes or to remove some small objects that are noise that you don't want. And this is what is done in the exercise here. So in the exercise here, I create an image that is binary, but that has some noise. And I want to retrieve my initial objects that were bigger and smoother. And for this, I will use two mathematical morphology functions, closing and opening, which are found in the scikit-image.morphology. So we have 5 minutes left in the tutorial. So we have two possibilities, either doing the exercise together or finishing the lecture with some image segmentation strategies. So who wants to do the exercise? Yes? Who wants to see image segmentation? Okay, so more people. So what I propose is that people who want to do the exercise, you do the exercise, and no. And I cover the segmentation, and at the end, when it's time for the coffee break, but I will take 2 minutes just to correct, so that there will be something for everybody. But so people who want to do the exercise, don't listen to what I say about segmentation now. Close your ears. So image segmentation, it consists in attributing labels to pixels, like object and background. And we have already seen some segmentation using thresholding, either simple thresholding or local thresholding, thresholding followed with some post-processing or preceded by pre-processing, like using a filter, a median filter before thresholding can be useful. But in scikit-image, you can also use more advanced algorithm, which require less hand tuning. That is, I have an image, and boom, I want it to be segmented in some objects. And you have several approaches for this. Here, I covered two approaches, and I think I will describe only the first one here in this room, which is a marker-based segmentation. So marker-based, it uses some pixels of which we are sure, completely sure, they belong either to background or foreground, or they belong to a given class of pixels. So you remember this coins object? So when we plotted, so here this pink contour, the best O2 threshold, it was not a good value because it mixed together pixels from the background, from the foreground. However, we have pixels in the histogram where let me just show again the histogram. we were really sure about this. So this is a histogram, and so these pixels, which are really dark, they should correspond to the background, and the pixels which are really bright, they should correspond to the coins. Just that you see in the histogram, you have no clear separation. That's why O2 thresholding was not really good. So let's take some values like 30. 30, it's a blue contour here. It should definitely belong to the background. And value smaller than 30, and value larger than 150, so it's inside this yellow contour, they should belong to the coins. We still have all these values in between. We are not sure of them. Like, but we will be able to, so these values, they will be not known. The segmentation algorithm has to determine them. But we will use these values, bright ones, and these values, the black ones, as markers. And we will use marked pixel to propagate the labels through the neighbors until all pixels are determined. So for this, we use an algorithm that's called the watershed algorithm. And it uses an array of edges, so I will just display it, it's easier. So you have the array of markers here with known pixels of the background here in beige, known pixels of the foreground in white. And the array of edges, it tells the propagation algorithm how to propagate the label. If you have a strong edge, you should not be able to go through this edge because you want to stay inside regions that have similar gray values. So you cannot cross strong gradients. That's why you need an edge array. And for this, you use the Sobol filter. And then you call this watershed segmentation algorithm from the segmentation module, and you create an array that is binary, so foreground and background. So this does automatic segmentation. As long as you provide the markers, then it does an automatic segmentation of the image of edges. And yeah, one thing that is very important is once that you have a binary image, you want to label the different connected components. You want to have a different number for each of these coins. And for this, you have one very convenient function of scikit-image, which is called label. It takes a binary image, or just a 0 and 1, and it attributes a different label to every object that is disconnected from the rest. So I've seen that some people re-implement this kind of methods, but it's just one function. And please use the label functions. And after, when you have a labeled array, you can measure the properties of labeled object using the measure.regionProps function. And so I'm not explaining it here, but you can ask for areas, mean intensities, perimeters, and so on. So all this is already coded in scikit-image. Okay? So I know I went really fast at the end, but I hope I started slowly enough so that there was something for everybody. So this is the end of the tutorial. I'm not forgetting that I should correct the exercise, but just want to wrap up. If you want to do more, you have actually a lot of scikit-image tutorials on the scikit-image GitHub repository. So you can have more of them if you want to go through them. Spend time on the gallery of scikit-image. Ask questions either on GitHub or on the mailing list. And we also have a paper that you can cite if you find it useful. So it's always nice to acknowledge the paper for the authors. So thanks a lot. You've been a great crowd, and it was nice to interact with you. I will stay here during the first half of the coffee break. So first to correct the exercise, and also to answer your questions. You have a question? No. If you wish. And of course, if you want to talk more about image processing, I'm happy to talk about it. I'm here until Friday. On Friday, we will have a sprint on scikit-image. So if you're interested in contributing to the package, you're more than welcome to come. Thanks a lot, and enjoy the coffee, not only the coffee images that we had. We didn't use the coffee image. We only had the cat image. Sorry about that. So let's enjoy some coffee. Thank you. So let me correct the mathematical morphology. It was here, so I had this noisy image, and morphology dot binary opening noisy im. So opening removes the small white dots. What an opening does, it's first an erosion and then a dilation. Having the two allows you not to modify too much, because if you just did an erosion, you would remove the small white dots, but then you would also have shrunk all the shapes. So you make them grow again by doing the dilation. It's just that the small objects have gone. And then, thank you. And then closing. Binary closing of opening. So you see this pipeline mode. You just apply a filter on the filter that you had before, on the output that you had. And this is it. So it's not perfect, but it's really less noisy than the first one.